This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Kyle, Paul, and Jimmy, and today we're continuing our Rooks and Vets coverage of Syfy's The Magicians Season 5. This is going to be Episode 8, entitled Garden Variety Homicide. And since Kathleen is not here today, I have the official Syfy description ready to go, and that description is: Josh returns from his nephew's bar mitzvah, Margo and Elliot share a mojito.
No Breakfills reference is interesting.
Mm-mm. And I kind of jotted down some notes about kind of things that I was expecting pre-episode. And I'm saying right now, just the knowledge of Josh returning into this show puts a smile on my face. Like, I'm so happy to have that energy back. And him and Margo are overdue for a conversation, of course. And then, you know, with the whole mojito thing, I was like, all right, another Elliot Margo centric episode where maybe they talk over the Dark King, maybe over mojitos. Like, I'm excited. I also am really missing Katie and Zelda because we haven't seen them now for 2 episodes, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least 1 episode for Katie. And we didn't get any Katie this episode. So I don't know what's up with her or Zelda.
Yeah. I just want to say, guys, that I've been hiding in the WandaVision corner of Bingetown TV, and I'm happy to be back. Geez, for me, I've been off for like 4 episodes. You guys have been killing it. I was listening to the last couple episodes. Huge smile on my face. You guys are killing it with this stuff. I'm so happy to be back on.
We're happy to have you back, Senpai, and the WandaVision corner is not a bad corner to be in as far as Bingetown TV corners. Not quite as good as the Cursed corner, but, you know.
Well, the curse is Hall of Fame corner.
I feel bad that Kathleen isn't on this episode just because of the mojito that the they share, and I can only imagine the like page and a half of notes Kathleen had. All right, we'll do you justice.
Yeah,
try our best.
We could totally say that for every episode. That girl is like in love with this show to a fault, not actually to a fault, but that girl loves her magicians, and I respect that. So Luke is also the guy that always goes over our buckets. So we like to, you know, compartmentalize the plots into separate buckets. This episode kind of revolved around the plot line at Breakbills with Alice, Penny, and Hamish, and then the rest of the gang in Fillory. We're going to go through Breakbills first, and then we're going to hit Fillory. So our first scene in Breakbills is going to be Hamish and Alice in the Breakbills laboratory, and we find out immediately that Alice took the kind of circumstance manipulating panel out of the greenhouse and put it into this laboratory. And Hamish comes in already heated, like, I took this job because magic worked in my greenhouse and I should have known that you would just mess it up right away. Immediate sparks are flying between the two of these. Just,
what do you mean by sparks? What do you mean by that?
Oh, I mean that there is chemistry and it is undeniable, and that Alice doesn't want to want it, but she wants it. And we don't want it either, but I don't know. This Hamish, he's hanging around.
Yeah, I was going to say, both of you guys, both the Rooks weren't feeling it last episode.
Now, I don't want anything to do with them being romantically involved.
B-Tums, you thought sparks were flying when he grabs her purse and just turns it upside down, says, here's, pick up all your shit.
I mean, when you say it like that, it seems like I'm romanticizing this asshole. But that was part of the flirting. They had a nice back and forth. He was like, you want to mess with my greenhouse? How does this feel?
Honestly,
how B-Tom's flirts.
Yeah, I'm a dick.
Yeah, pull on her ponytail, yeah. Yeah, but honestly, I could see him being so mad because in the beginning we see him getting this one plant and he's spraying it and keeping it alive. Is this a westward-facing window? That's the first plant he grabs. At the end, knowing what that plant meant to him, I can kind of see why he was super pissed off and upset.
Yeah. My man's loves his plants, and the title of the episode is Garden Variety Homicide, and the entire time, once I knew that, I was thinking, this is probably going to be Hamish's last episode. I thought on that title alone that they were going to kill him off. Obviously, it is titled that for a different reason, though. But I was worried about Hamish. When he shakes out the purse, everything falls out, obviously. But one of those things is this page of notes that used to belong to Q. And Hamish is immediately interested because it's a very unique kind of schematic. And he says, whoa, there's some crazy stuff going on, but I don't really recognize this plant. I know a taxonomist friend who could probably, you know, identify what this is a picture of. So the next scene is going to be Hamish and Alice going to Dean Adeodi. And I still can't get over that Penny is the dean. Jimmy, do you want to comment on that? I feel like he hasn't been dean since last time you were on the pod.
No, he hasn't. I think you guys nailed it when you were talking about it. It's hilarious that he's the dean. We got to give the props to Dean Fogg for all the shit he's dealt with, all these freaking timelines and through all the stuff that's been going on. And we all talked about him. Well, you guys all talked about he deserves his retirement. But it is funny how I can't remember who brought it up. It might have been Paul saying that it's ironic that he, you know, he acts like he doesn't care, but he does care. So that's why it's such a good role for him right now. So, yeah, I'm fine with him being Dean for now. I want Fogg back, though.
Of course.
I want Fogg back, too. Penny. Yeah,
we need Big Hank behind the desk.
Penny's not the dean type. He was just barely treading water as a professor, let alone dean. So, I would love to see Fogg 40 come back. So anyway, Hamish and Alice are trying to get clearance for Hamish's friend Raylan, the taxonomist, to come and visit to identify this plant. But he whips out the manila folder, and apparently this guy Raylan is no fuego. He's on the dean's do not admit list. And Penny, his first instinct is, nah, screw this guy. He's not coming in. He could have, like, some weird interdimensional STD. Like, who knows what he's carrying? Fuck that. And Alice plays the cue card.
Yeah, she does.
Plays it like a goddamn fiddle.
Let me ask you guys something. As the Rooks, were you waiting for that page to come back? I mean, it was a big thing in the early episodes, and we didn't hear about it for 5 episodes or so, maybe.
I honestly forgot about it because a lot of things have happened, especially it almost feels like the whole apocalypse, those 2 episodes, was like a fresh slate after that. Like, everything that happened before that barely matters in everything now. But I'm glad it is coming back because I'm really interested in what this is going to be about. But I did write, and interesting, a few times that you were saying sparks are flying, that this was the moment that Bax recognizes that he ain't getting any of that Alice Punani.
Dude, what happens here?
Well, just like her bringing up Q and like how important the page is because of Q and it might not be super obvious, and definitely me projecting a little bit, but onto his expression, but it seemed like he kind of realized, like, oh, wow, okay, it's a special thing to her.
And Penny, man, Penny caved immediately. He was like, okay, we'll test him thoroughly, but then finally we'll let him in if he passes.
That'll bring us to the next scene where it's Penny, Alice, and Hamish, and they are testing this guy, Raylan. He goes by Ray, and it's kind of a cool way to test him. He like chews on a root or something like that. And spits it out. It's purple. Apparently purple is good. Otherwise it would be like shitting out spiders. Is that what they said?
Yeah. Spine infested spiders or something like that.
Sounds absolutely horrible. Yeah. And it also sounds like Luke's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And this guy must know he doesn't have that disease, because who would be okay with taking that test otherwise?
That's actually a really, really good point. I have a question. Who does this guy look like? Like a dollar store version of someone?
The dude from the Jason Statham?
Oh, that's actually not a bad one. I honestly think he looks a little bit like Andy Whitfield.
Ooh.
Well, I'm going to pull this up real quick.
All right, our boy. Our
that's
OG
high
Spartacus.
Praise, man. That is high praise.
He's not as handsome. A-N-D-Y.
Hilarious, actually. Holy shit. This one picture is like a bald Andy Whitfield straight up. Like,
yeah, right? Jason Statham was a good guess, though.
That is a good guess.
I was thinking bald guys. Funny,
yeah,
he kind of fit the bill.
We also cover Spartacus, everyone.
So, shameless plug. I don't know about you, Kyle, but I was getting bad vibes from this dude from the start. Alice was wildly self-confident in herself. Like when she was chirping with this dude, they had a great back and forth. I thought she completely owned him, but you know.
Oh yeah, she has great reason to be confident in herself.
Yeah, for sure.
Destroyed him, honestly. I'm gonna say a word you don't know. First of all, who the fuck says that? And the audacity to even say that sentence to somebody you just met.
And to say it to Alice fucking Quinn.
Yeah.
And she Who the fuck do you think you're talking to?
Oh, you're one of those.
Yeah. So this guy, Ray, he obviously has a big ego, but he says that this plant is exceptionally rare, but it's definitely like a thing. He's very intrigued by this, by these notes. And he claims to be like the only person in the world that would be able to identify it. And he kind of ushers Alice out of the room by saying, Hey, Toots, like, get me these supplies. Okay. Like, let me handle this. There's tension here, but this is the first time where we see his eye kind of like freak out as Alice and Penny leave the room. So yeah, this dude is bad news. That'll fast forward us to Alice returning for the supplies that Ray asked her to get. And she sees Hamish is like passed out on the floor and Ray is immediately making a run for the door. They have an exchange wherein she uses battle magic to push him up against the wall and he explodes. Spores comes out.
Before that happened, she did kind of lock the door in and he did say to her, he had a short conversation saying just like, all right, listen, I will buy this from you. And she was like, I don't even know what it is. And then he tries to pull some magic and Alice again just destroys him physically this time. And she was like, that was an accident. Like I just pushed him and he exploded.
Yeah, he popped open like a balloon.
Yeah, it wasn't the best strategy for our boy, man. All he had to do was say, oh, that this thing looks like crap. It's nothing. And just be like, nah, you don't need it. Let me just pocket this shit.
That's so true. Actually, he did hype it up and then try to steal it. I never even thought of that.
But I mean, now we have Alice has her confirmation. He tries to run away with it. He tries to buy it off her. We know it's a big deal.
Yeah. And Hamish comes to right as this is happening. And he said, you know, these spores are just kind of floating over the unconscious body. And he's like, we got to seal off this room and get out of here. So that's what they do. And the next time we see them is with Penny in the dean's office. And they're just kind of giving Penny the lowdown about what happened. Hamish hypothesizes that Ray was hosting some sort of a symbiote and kind of like sharing brain power. You know, we don't really know what's exactly is going on. Ray is definitely dead, but the spores will want a new host body. Penny's like, fuck this. Like, this is my third day as dean. Like, I don't know how to close air vents and shit. Let's just evacuate everybody. They go outside and the first people they run into have already been zombified. So new hypothesis. This is more of a, what does he say? New theory, zombie plague situation where it could be spread to multiple hosts. So that's exactly what we have. This is a zombie episode of The Magicians.
I was just into that when that whole line. I was like, all right, let's go. I can get down with this. But if I'm honest, I kind of wish that it would have lasted a little longer then.
Just give us the page, Alice. Also, so creepy.
I think Penny overreacted a little bit to the whole, like, it's my third day's dean. I don't know how air vents work. It's like, I don't, like, are they I guess maybe they're magical air vents.
It's probably like the wards that you just have to, there's probably a spell to do everything on this.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I just keep thinking, whenever I'm thinking of the symbiotes, I think about Venom and they're talking about like and it's always we are Venom and we are Carnage. Love it.
I love how they did have conversation later on. They said, what are you doing to us? And I was like,
I was thinking the same thing, though, because this kind of reminded me of the bank heist episode. The magicians made a conscious decision to say, all right, we want to have a bank heist episode. I wish they did that with the zombie plague episode, you know, and spent more time drawing out the plot. But it was fun.
Where else do they go?
Yeah.
Then to their prisoner, Dean Fogg from Timeline 17.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And he's in the clean room right now. So they're just trying to get a solution for this mess that they're in. And he tries to leverage it. Like,
first of all, he owns Penny. He's like, oh, you bring some guy who's traveled all around the world. He's traveled to whatever planet or something that is. And you're going to assume he doesn't have other diseases that we can't test for. Come on, bro.
If he's crazy enough to go to Insanzia, that means he's crazy enough to go to God knows where else and pick up things they don't even know how to test for.
Yeah. Dean Fogg says straight up, you're the worst dean in history. And then he says, I have the solution, but, you know, I obviously want to go free in exchange for this solution. And he says that he developed a potion with a Dr. Maria Pilkin. And right there, he just loses his leverage because Alice is just like, ooh, too bad for you. She's dead in this timeline. And they released all of her work after she died. So it's probably just in the library. So Dean Fogg, poor guy, cannot get his release. And as they're walking out, he stops Penny. And he's like, I will get out of here. And then I'll turn you into lobsters and eat you. This Fogg is crazy.
Yeah, he's not a poor guy.
Kyle, the more I listened to the last episode that we did, and you said that there was a Fogg vacuum that they have already filled, and you said that you still think that Fogg 40 is going to come back. I don't know that he is. I think Fogg 17 is the new Fogg.
No.
I think that's our guy.
No, I refuse to give up on Hank.
Okay.
You think Evil Fogg was hitting the chick he made the potion with?
Definitely, bro.
Definitely.
Could you imagine if Todd 17 didn't die and this world had two Todds running around?
That would be awesome.
That would be too much. Two Dark Kings? That's too much.
Two Dark Kings.
Where has Todd been? I feel like Todd should be involved. Why is Todd not part of the gang? And they go to the physical cottage and Todd's not there? Like, what the fuck's going on? He's too expensive, bro. They can only have him in so many episodes. Yeah, he's an A-lister.
He's on another Netflix show. He's busy.
He's a beast.
I wish he was in Fillory right now with the squad, but yeah, I don't know. We haven't seen Todd for a bit. I hope we get some more. Anyway, so now that they know that they need to find Dr. Pilkin's book, they go to the library and there's this scene where Alice like sneaks in. She says, because there are zombies crawling all through the library, and she says, good thing I have practiced being invisible from high school. And she kind of like weaves through the stacks to find the book, and as she's about to leave, one of them catches her eye, chases her out. Penny knocks him out. So now they have the book with the solution to the zombie plague, and they have a guinea pig to test it on.
This is so frustrating because they can't use magic again. It just feels like season 3 all over, where like the plumbers just turned everything off. It's so frustrating. And they knew they were going to do it. And now they're like, oh, shit, we got to fucking clean up our mess.
I would like to know if I think Kathleen and Luke were the only ones who read the book, so I can't ask you guys, but I would like to know what Alice looked like in the books, because there's no way you could tell me that Alice was invisible in high school.
Yeah, not with those bazookas.
Yeah, and she does, and she has those kind of lines all the time in the show, and I'm like, no way. Okay.
I think her physical appearance in the book is supposed to be more like her personality, like kind of a scrawny, nerdy looking person.
Kind of like how Hermione and Emma Watson in the books and it versus the movies.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, she's not supposed to be that hot.
No, she's supposed to have buck teeth, bushy hair. Like,
what you gonna do? I ain't complaining.
I'm not complaining.
I'm just saying, when they casted Hermione for Sorcerer's Stone, they probably didn't know how much of a fox that she was going to grow up to be. So
that's true. That's true.
That's a very good point.
Anyway, that'll bring us to Hamish and Alice in the physical cottage. And they're just trying to, you know, talk through what's going on, try and figure out a solution. Actually, that's not true. They already have the solution. Sorry, let's back up. What the fuck happens this scene?
They go back to Dean Aote's office, which is just, I'm so not used to saying that either, B-Toms. I'm totally on board with you. And they end up making this potion from the book, and it works. The spores jump out of this guy who was previously affected, but it jumps right into Penny. And he hits us with a, just give us the page, Alice.
Yeah.
So dumb, dude. They are smarter than that.
And I just want to say, the symbiote totally missed their chance not jumping into Alice in the very beginning. I was waiting during my rewatch. I'm sitting there, and it comes out of they come out of our boy Ray, and they're just sitting there. And I'm
whose
like,
boy?
Your boy.
Your boy, Ray. Yeah, I didn't say nothing about it. That's your boy.
Your boy. But they just sit there. They don't go into Alice. They go into Alice. They got the page. They're out. They're living the dream.
Yeah. I was also upset at like their whole idea was just Bax and Penny are going to hold this guy down with their arms. It's like, come on. We got Alice Quinn. We're better than this. We could have figured out a better solution.
Yeah.
But we got to move the plot along. So
now that Penny is infected, that'll bring us to Hamish and Alice in the physical cottage thinking about what they need to do next. And Hamish, you know, because he doesn't know what the sentimental value suggests, just giving the spore the note. And he has the audacity to say, would Quentin want you to die for this? She shoots him daggers and says, back the fuck off, botanist.
That was totally the best deserved line of the episode,
such
I thought.
Such a good line. Yeah.
There's a lot of good Elliot and Margot, obviously, because they're just the best.
Just about to say.
But that was my favorite line of the whole episode. It just hits so hard.
And he knows immediately. He's like, okay, maybe I stepped a little too far there.
I think he only broached the subject because he was preparing to tell the story that he tells right now. And it's, you know, the background of his Scottish primrose and his late wife, who obviously passed away, who took care of this super delicate thing that could even, you know, die if a blade of grass fell on it. And it was a huge point of pride for her. So they kind of relate the two things. They both lost someone. It's a nice moment. This is actually a scene where I started to think that these two are just meant to be friends, but I kind of like them as friends. You know, they challenge each other. Luke said last episode, he's an inquisitive mind, like they're good dialogue partners. So I'm about the friendship.
I loved this scene. I thought it was far and away the best of the Break Bills storyline. It's just a really, really great conversation.
And Kyle, I want to know, because I kind of like Hamish as a character, and neither of us ship these two, and you talk a lot of shit when I broach the subject of him and Alice being together, but do you like the character Hamish?
Oh, yeah. Just don't try to get in Alice's panties. Back the fuck off.
That's a really good point, though, that you brought up earlier. He is an inquisitive mind, and it is cool to see Alice be able to bounce ideas like off of him and kind of figure stuff out.
Yeah, it's weird because Penny is not that. Penny has been a pushover this whole season. I'm just going to say it. Once he lost traveling, he's like useless.
He's the dean.
Like legitimately useless. Nobody like Alice met this Hamish guy a week ago and he's already higher on the pecking order of who she can bounce ideas off of.
Yeah, and he even becomes dean and that gives him power to do things and he doesn't really use it to do anything.
I do love just us getting more botany info in general. I mean, that's just cool world building. I didn't really want it. I wasn't like, oh, I hope we get like some plant explanations, but like we get it and it's just so cool.
I just want to say, as someone who didn't get to be on the last podcast, Dave's answer about why he would bang Hamish was awesome. He's like, we'll bang, and then he'll just find me some plants and roll some kush for me.
You know where Dave's head's always at.
Oh, man.
And to close out this scene, though, Alice kind of just like has a brain blast and looks at Hamish and says, I think I know what to do. Next time we see them is Alice alone sitting in the dean's desk and zombie Penny comes in. And I really like how these spores are like, they're not like zombies, you know, they kind of like talk and are able to reason with other people. Like Paul said, like he offered to buy the note off of her originally. So it's like a sentient being, I guess. Yep. But this scene is Penny is coming to collect. He says, essentially, I could turn you into a spore. Or you could just give me the notes. Either way, I'm going to get it. And Alice just kind of like talking to him, kind of just distracting him, I guess you would say. And she says, okay, I'll give you the page only if you tell me why you want it. And we finally get the explanation of what this page is. So the spore explains that the notes are an instruction manual for something called the World Seed. And the World Seed is a magical botanical organism. The legend is the seed is pure potential. With the right nurturing, it can grow into almost anything, even an entire world. So this is a very powerful magical object, I would say. And Kyle, I don't know about you. This is a very interesting plot point for me. I think this has a lot of potential to be like fucking anything. I'm really excited about where they're taking this.
Yeah, I like the idea of it. Although I will say that it does just kind of feel weird midway through the last season that this, you know, it almost has the vibes of like the Seven Key Quest, where it could have been an entire season on its own. And now we're kind of just getting in on the second half. I mean, I just feels like they literally have nothing to do with Break Bills. So this isn't a bad thing for them to put in there, but it does feel like it should just be its end season.
Yeah, I mean, it's to their defense, and I guess you guys will have to see what happens, but they didn't know this is the series finale this season. So, but I just think it's really cool that this seems like an end game kind of magical object, and it came from Q. You know,
that's a really good point, too.
Yeah.
I mean, do you guys have any theories about why he even had it?
It seems like Alice knows.
Yeah.
At the end of this scene, she kind of, you know, her expression, the tone of her voice. And I was trying to think, and I literally have no idea. The only thing I could think about was that he was trying to use it to bring her back to life. So like she might try to use it to bring him back. But I don't know if that's the angle they'll take.
He was doing it to grow another Alice Quinn. And he was just going to have his own personal.
Have a golem of Alice made from the magical seed.
Yeah.
from his magical seed.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. So in the middle of this conversation, Penny kind of grabs the paper and he's about to walk out. He's not giving too much of an explanation. And then all of a sudden he starts leaning onto the wall because he can't walk. And he starts falling over, saying, what are you doing? Like, what's happening right now? And Alice is just a genius. She said, hey, like, we recognized you could have jumped into all of our bodies, but you didn't. You only jumped into one when you had a chance to jump in all three. That means you didn't want to spread yourself out, which means if we spread it to everybody else and it cuts to Hamish, and he's like, oh, I'm just a teacher infecting you with the spore from God knows where, like, just teacher stuff, don't worry about it. And he spreads it so thin that basically he said at the very end, Alice says, oh, don't worry, you're not going to die. You're just getting much quieter, which is crazy.
So everybody, these people are still hosting it, but it's spread so thin, its consciousness just can't even affect their body or mind. Like, it's...
So when in like 40 years or 50 years, if they slowly start dying, do you think those students are all of a sudden just going to be taken over?
My thoughts exactly. I literally had that same exact thought and I was going to say it. I was shocked that this is the ending of... They just infected everyone, and then she said, "You'll be a part of them forever." I was like, "What?"
Kyle, I don't want to talk about something that B. Tom's and Paul don't know, but Carnival Row, it's like Orlando Bloom situation where he makes the mini Dark Asher. He's like, "I'm good with that. I don't care."
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, it'll never die until you die. He's like, "All right, throw it in the jar."
We also cover Carnival Row, everybody.
Yeah, that was, you know, that's a great point. That's so similar. Not really understanding the future implications of what you're doing almost. Yeah.
I mean, it's fine as a temporary fix for the moment to like dodge them, but like hopefully they went back and like cured those people.
I just loved the cutscene of back spraying these students with this spore, because if you were a freshman at Break Bills and a professor walked up and did anything to you, you would be like, I don't know what's going on. Like, yeah, spray me up, dude. Didn't he just say, don't worry, like professor business or something like that? Like, what would you know? Maybe he's, I don't know. Like,
I'd be like, bro, I just got hired this week, man. I don't know who you are.
his job interview was just god awful. And this is like his second or third day, if that. And he's already just infecting innocent students with this.
You know, the physical kids are down with any outside substance, man.
A good point. Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Fuck it. Put it in my body. If it doesn't kill me, that's cool.
So to wrap this up, Penny, the real Penny, finally comes to, and he just like realized what happened, and it's just like, this is the worst fucking job ever. Penny hates his life right now, being the dean.
That was the best line. He's just like, this fucking sucks. I've been the dean for what, like a week?
He's just so done with it. But Alice is so smart. She's like, do you remember why you wanted these notes so bad? Like, what were your intentions? And it starts... Penny strains, but he can kind of remember some things. And he says, I wanted it to sell. There was a huge debt I had to pay. When the couple came to collect, they didn't ask any questions. He remembers being scared shitless of this couple, the couple. And he says they're very powerful. They have resources and they've been looking for this world seed page for a long time. They are not good people. So the couple seems like they're going to be causing some trouble coming up.
Yeah, so Rooks, what do you think? Another big bad? Are they just another pit stop on the way the Dark King finish?
I had my doubts last episode that Dark King is endgame, because I'm just so conflicted that he's like an actual bad guy, like Margot and Elliot, or Margot was this episode. She's like, I don't get it. This guy doesn't seem bad. So I don't think Dark King is endgame. I think the couple might be.
Okay.
Yeah, the whole concept of the world seed, like you said earlier, Jimmy, seems very endgame. I would want the couple to be like some extraterrestrial being. You know, I hope it's not just two humans, or maybe they have infested humans. I'm okay with it being like a parasite or a symbiote too, but I'm interested to see, because I'm so curious of how this symbiotic fungi could have a debt to what kind of being does a fungi have a debt to?
Mm-hmm. You could have control a certain amount of body.
I was going to say.
No, I agree. That's so weird. That is cool, though, that he's conscious enough to be able to like go around making deals.
It's very magicians-like, so because this show is so out there, I have no idea how to even peg down what the couple could be.
I think it was Penny's last line was, and it begs the question, what the fuck was Q doing with this paper, man?
I was thinking,
doesn't Alice
thing.
Say like I think I know or something like that? I just remember having the,
it was
the
all
feeling
on her,
that she knows. Okay, yeah.
It was on her face. She had a facial expression, which I think is supposed to lead us to believe that she's got some idea what's going on, but that is also contradictory to this whole episode where she's trying to figure out what the page is. So maybe she knows, like, what could she know? Because this whole season, she's been looking for answers about the page, you know? Does that make sense?
No, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, she got info that now she knows it's the world seed that can grow into anything, even an entirely new world. So maybe he was trying to grow a new world where Alice is still alive, and then she's going to grow a whole new world where Q's still alive.
So if it's...
And Penn and Josh are together, or Fenn and Josh are together, rather.
So if they said it is infinite potential, he gave the example of it could make a new world. If it could make a brand new world, then a brand new human doesn't seem that far off. So yeah, maybe Q was using it to remake Alice, and now Alice might do it to remake Q.
What do you guys think? I know you guys don't really want a Q appearance, or at least you said you didn't really want it in the early episodes.
I don't know. I mean, they could I still think that, but I could definitely be sold on a Q comeback if like the last scene is like him and Alice like with a nice thoughtful embrace and then we fade to black. I can live with that.
Yeah, I said I don't necessarily want Q because of how powerful his death was, but at the same time, if I see Q, I'm going to be happy, like really, really happy. So like I want Q, but like I don't need Q.
I just want a devil's advocate you here, Kyle, because if they do that and they fade to black and they didn't know it was the series finale, that means Q's back for season 6 and you didn't want him to be back full time, though, right?
Yeah, but I'm not thinking about this whole season 6 shit now.
Yeah, you're just down.
In the moment, I'm like, let's fucking go!
All right. Fine.
And I believe that's a wrap on Break Bills, right? Any lasting thoughts, Kyle? I'm pretty good. I think we touched on everything. I'm excited to find out more about the couple, honestly. I can't even... Yeah. It's so hard to hypothesize, like, theories for what's going to happen in the next episode because everything is so far out there in this show. Like, it's impossible to predict. I saw a scuba diver coming out of the water 2 episodes ago and legitimately thought it was a Kraken.
Yeah.
There's no way to predict things in this show. The fucking whales, like, what?
Do you guys think Hamish is going to be a part of the group for Endgame? Do you think he's just going to run his course in the next couple episodes? I mean, we only got a couple left, but...
I hope so. I think that Bethan's made a good point that him and Alice are good scene partners in terms of the conversations they can have. He's definitely useful. Like Paul said, the body angle is really cool, something we haven't had. I mean, him and Josh could fucking vibe, I'm sure. So I would like to see him be part of the squad, but I could also see him sacrificing himself. I mean, we already know he's got a tragic backstory. What does he really have to live for? Is a weird way to say it, but it's kind of true. You know, he's lost his wife. I could see him going out like a hero.
If we know one thing about the Magician's writers, we know that they can make someone that we don't really care about that much turn into a really great character pretty damn quick. So,
yeah, true. Definitely.
Yeah, like Hamish, I could see him being Endgame just because of the relationship that's going with Alice. And Alice, apparently Penny is worthless, so Alice kind of needs someone to be her number two. So, yeah, Hamish fits the bill. But
Penny's about to be a dad, too.
Oof.
Whoa!
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. So, yeah, that'll finish off Break Bills. So let's take it to Fillory. And we get this first scene is the cold opening of the show. And it's these kids playing Ring Around the Rosie. And an old woman is kind of like pretend chasing them around. She hears like a twig snap, goes to investigate. And when she comes back, these kids are gone. Alludes to the Takers took them. And that'll bring us to... the freaking squad. I loved this first scene. Just seeing the gang back in Fillory. Fenn, Josh, Elliot, Margot, and Julia. Let's go.
That is a great squad.
So good to see Josh motherfucking Hoberman back.
Immediately dropping like the Jewish quotes like from his bar mitzvah. I love it. So Julia is just like briefing them. They're talking about these six kids are missing and they're just saying something has to be done. This is a bad situation we're in. Elliot starts to blame himself because last episode he acquired the gold for Seb for him to summon the takers. And Josh says, I go away to my nephew's bar mitzvah for 1 week and everything's forgot. This dude's a legend. Margot says, all right, guys, we got to kill this DK. Dark King's got to die.
Josh is turned off by the whole concept of it because he's like, well, you know, my nephew's Torah was all about the sanctity of life. So can we do that like a peaceful transition of power? It's like this fucking guy.
I loved it so much. He was like, he was holding his hands together. It really moved me. I was like, Josh, dude, do you know like who you're in the room with and what they've done?
Exactly. They pretty much shrug it off.
King Margo the Destroyer.
They kind of start brainstorming it. Margo says immediately, no, this can't be peaceful. He has an army. Like, the public is on his side. We got to kill him and got to be over with it. Margo also notes that Dark King has survived 7 assassination attempts. He's obviously 300 years old, but he's tried to be killed and survived all 7 assassination attempts, which is noteworthy. So this guy's not to be trifled with. Julia says, hey, I'm here to stop the apocalypse that the pig man sent me on. And it's sounding like he was describing this whole Dark King situation. So I'm on board. And they all agree that, unfortunately, Elliot is the one that's perfectly placed to do the deed. And our mans can't catch a break.
We're a cook, a maid, an army grunt, a Julia, and a counselor / confidant. And they were like, oh, shit. Like, I guess it has to be that last one.
I would like to mention that Fenn has the quote, I doubt you can just walk up and stab the guy. And I wrote right after she said that Fenn is going to do exactly that this episode and kill him. And unfortunately, I was wrong. But you're there's close, still time though. For that to happen. I think it's going to end game. It's going to be it. Fenn. I hope so. I need Fenn to defend Fillory like that. I need it. Even though it's probably going to be Elliot. She does deserve it.
Could you imagine, though, that you're Elliot, basically the dude that you love just died not too long ago. You're kind of finally crushing on another dude, and then all your friends are like, hey, do us a favor and kill him.
Yeah, we got to kill this guy too, sorry. Yeah, that's definitely no bueno.
Margo should know, of all people. I mean, she knows, like, this has to be done, but at the same time, she should be expecting Elliot to just break. I mean, he's on the verge at any point in the last 5 seasons with everything that he's dealt with all of his the people that he's loved dying.
Well, that is kind of the next scene that we get is Elliot and Margo just kind of having a sidebar in a hallway at Whitespire. And Margo walks up to Elliot talking to Charlton about it, that he's conflicted about assassinating Seb. And Charlton's just saying, you got to tell them, like, this has to work. You got to tell them if you're not going to be able to do the deed. Enter Margo, who notes that he's talking to somebody, and Elliot gives her the cold shoulder. She's just like, all right, it's that, Elliot, like, I'm done. And I like this quote. Charlton's like, hey, listen, I don't know if I'm the right person to say this, but like, I truly don't understand why you don't at least tell Margo. You guys are best friends, like, what the hell? So Elliot finally admits to Margo that he might not be in the best headspace to assassinate him. He might not be able to pull the trigger. And Elliot's pretty Margo's pretty sympathetic and says, hey, as long as you can find his pivotal weakness, then I promise you, you will not be the one that has to pull the trigger.
And Elliot's saying, how can you possibly say that? She says, I don't know, but you're my friend and I'm going to figure it out. And it's hard to love them any more than you already do, but goddamn, they always find a way.
She is just an absolute gem, man. She's like, what do when we get crushes? We bang them out. That's just like not what he wanted to hear at all. But that's what Margaret's bringing to the table. Take it or leave it.
Elliot also notes that no person should ever have to kill someone that they just slept with more than once, because he had to do that with, what was his name? Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike. And now he has to do it with Seb too, which is very reasonable. Once is okay, but like more than once, that's too much.
He's just crushing on those bad boys, man. pick somebody else. And then we get hit with the title sequence. And it's just, you just look at it more and more every time. And it's just so cool, all the stuff they put in that you didn't even realize. I mean, they have
What did you see this time that you didn't realize before?
Just the whales in the top right corner going by, and then like the Dark King insignia up in the top left hand. It's almost like the cross. It's the badge that Elliot wears.
Nice.
It's just so cool.
Yeah, I didn't know that they did that in the opening sequence until like last season. I was like, ah, that's cool. I don't know. Whatever. So next scene we get is going to be back at Whitespire. It's a Julia and Fenn scene. And Julia walks up to Fenn, who's just sweeping the halls because she's a maid. Love that running joke. And Julia's just like, hey, I'm feeling off. If I was on Earth, I would know what to do. But is there any like leaf I could chew on in Fillory to tell if I'm... And then it's like a smash cut to Julia holding this bunny who's screaming, pregnant, pregnant, pregnant.
That was a really good bunny voice, dude.
Unbelievable.
They're back, dude. They're back and with a vengeance, Kyle.
I didn't listen, but did you keep in your bunny from last episode?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was
good. Bunnies are the fucking best.
So Julia's pregnant. That's news.
And you know what that means, right? She's officially a MILF.
Not officially.
I was going to say.
Well, I guess.
Yeah. Are you technically a mom when you're pregnant? I would say no.
All right. Well, then fuck me.
You're an expecting mother.
Okay.
Email.
Well, then just cut that.
She's an email. Okay.
Email, babe.
An email. We'll allow it. Emails are MILFs too, Jimmy.
Hell yeah. So let me ask you guys, who was it? Which one of the rooks last episode brought up the fact that you thought Jenny 23 wasn't going to last? I mean, they still might not, but...
Yeah, it was me. And honestly, I was thinking about that in the car today. I wanted to double down because Kyle was saying that's like a realistic end to Julia's goddess story arc. And I'm like, no, it wouldn't be. She's like half-assing this relationship with Penny. Julia is not the kind of person that needs a man. Like, she does not necessitate a husband.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so. I feel both of you guys on whatever you're saying. I was just saying, does anything change now that you know that she has this scene with the bunny?
Not for me, because this whole episode is her like wrestling with her feelings, but go ahead, Kyle.
I think it's just funny that this is like the one relationship on the show that we kind of have questions about, and now it's becoming far and away. This is the most serious thing to happen in any of the relationships across all of the seasons, and it's happening to the relationship that we hate the most, or that we don't like, or we like the least, I guess you could say. I don't want to say hate, but I thought it was interesting that she says that Penny and I are in a weird place. She doesn't say they're broken up. She doesn't say they're not together. They're just in a weird place. And I don't know if she would have said that before she found out that she was pregnant, because the pregnancy obviously puts them in a weird place, but she obviously cares about him. And the pregnancy is the perfect scenario for Mr. Wants to Settle Down Penny. So I'm interested to see how he reacts to it.
Fenn is just the best. She's like, oh, I don't even know why I'm crying. Just, babies.
Julia also continues to say, you know, me and Penny are in a weird place. Can we keep this a secret just between you and me? And Fenn's like, don't even worry about it. I'm so good at keeping secrets. I've kept Elliot's fear of butterflies secret for years. Until now, shit, she gets so pissed at herself, and just that facial acting is ridiculous. I love her.
We get an amazing payoff, too, on the Elliot being afraid of butterflies later.
Yeah, we do. So the next scene we have is Elliot and Margo just kind of talking shop, and Josh comes in through the door with a nice plate of macaroons, and he offers them some, and Margo is having none of it. She's like, all right, Hoberman, nice try. Get the fuck out of here with those macaroons. And Elliot's like, all right, like, I get that you don't want to talk to him, but we can at least take the snacks. Margo says, no, those are traps, not snacks. That dude's like an emotional ninja. So Margo is still avoiding this inevitable Josh conversation. But she says that this whole situation gives her an idea. And then we get the next scene is Elliot walking into the Dark King's quarters with a plate full of macaroons.
I just want to take the time that once again, Kathleen isn't here to talk a little shit on Margo. And she was acting way out of pocket in that scene.
She slams the door and looks at Al's like, can you believe that guy? And Elliot's like, yeah, like, what do you mean? He was bringing us snacks. That's nice.
That's what he does at every other scene he's in, is bring everyone snacks.
I wonder if all of his baked goods are like edible.
On the show, like for the castmates and stuff, that would be awesome. I hope so. I hope Trevor actually does it himself. He actually bakes them himself.
We'll get him on the pod and ask him. How about that?
The Dark King is looking depressed in his chambers. He's like curled up in the fetal position, leaning against the wall, looking out a window. And Elliot goes over, puts the macaroons down, doesn't even offer him one. And he's freaking out, saying, you know, six kids. Like, I could have been there to save him, but I wasn't. And he just hates himself for it. And Elliot's like, hey, being a king's hard.
And Elliot goes as far as to say, you know, have you ever thought of stepping down? Like, do you need to do this? Obviously still thinking that he doesn't want to kill him. So maybe if you get Seb to step down, that would achieve the same goal. And Seb is pretty insistent that this is my burden. And then he references, he says, this is all because of a choice I made a long time ago, attached to a conduit. I thought it was the only way that I could save Fillory. And then he just kind of like trails off and doesn't explain it any more than that. So he's being very vague, but he made a choice a long time ago, has something to do with a conduit to save Fillory. I didn't really know what to make of it.
I'm getting a little bit of, this might not be the best comparison, and I'm not huge, I don't know a ton about like Watchmen lore, but it kind of sounds almost Ozymandias like, where it's like, I have to do this evil thing to kind of unite everyone. If Fillory isn't united against this, yeah, against this one evil, then it's going to fall apart for various reasons that we don't know yet. That's the only way I can think that he truly believes what he's saying, because it does seem like he actually believes what he's saying, but it's a weird way that he's like, you know, this is my burden, but he's actively creating the burden that he then has to then deal with.
Where my head goes immediately is that there is someone higher up on the food chain than the Dark King that is threatening all of Fillory and essentially saying, if you don't, someone who has something to gain from the Takers terrorizing Fillory, and Seb is just the middleman. Yes.
Someone
Kyle.
Or some two people, yeah, the couple.
And that's what I'm thinking, the couple, because I even said on the last podcast episode that I think Endgame could be everybody squatting up, including the Dark King. I don't know. Dark King has so many redeemable qualities, but that could all just be a red herring. And I like it because the characters like Margot and Elliot are right where I'm at right now, not knowing if we can trust this guy or not.
So B-Times, you're thinking that when Seb is actually saying, like acting depressed and saying, all right, six kids, this is awful. He's not acting. You think that he's actually upset about it?
I think it seems genuine, yes. Yeah, and okay. I'm not, yeah.
Because you see Elliot's face when he kind of like responds like, all right, this dude's kind of lying to me.
Yeah. But at the same time, Elliot also doesn't know if it's a lie or not. Elliot's definitely still trying to help this guy out.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. But he kind of like rolls his eyes a little bit when he says it. Because, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Well, all I was going to say was, nothing, I guess, turns them on more than talking about dead kids, because they just start smooching right away without any other signs or anything. And this is a new segment. Kyle and B-Toms, you haven't been around for this yet, but there's a segment called Paul's Sexiest Scene of the Episode. And Seb is fucking chiseled, dude. Okay, excuse my French, but he's got cum gutters. Like, straight up. It's unbelievable. All right, that's it. That's all I have to say.
And he's tatted, too. They made a real point about his tat.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul's sexiest scene, man. I can't wait for the future segments.
I was unaware of this, but if this is our first official segment, I'm so on board.
It made its debut in WandaVision last episode.
Love it. So, yeah, we get that kissing scene, and Seb turns the sexiness off and backs away, apologizes, says like, ooh, I lost myself. It's weird now.
It's so weird.
It's weird.
I just want to say that I would say he more pushes the sexiness away. I don't think Seb is capable of turning his sexiness off.
That's true. Touche.
Semantics, but, you know, important.
I'm with you. Next scene in Fillory.
Oh, yeah. See?
Elliot.
He just walks out all blue balled, and we were like, where do we go from here? And we all forgot.
Because it was so sexy.
I'm still thinking about the cum gutters. Damn.
Yeah. We're all dickmatized right now.
True. Yeah. So it just has that way.
this next scene is going to be Elliot reporting back to the squad what he learned about Seb and, you know, the vague description of this conduit that he has. And Josh is the only one who has heard of a vitality conduit. And he says, vitality conduit is a naturalist ritual. The most common application is drawing the life force out of something like a stalk of corn to fight a summer cold. So obviously, if Seb is using a vitality conduit, much more powerful magic than stalk of corn to fight a summer cold. Elliot suggests, because of the tattoo being a tree, that the conduit could be some sort of tree. And Fen raises her hand like, ooh, I know. And Elliot's like, dude, you could just talk, Fen. And she says that that's a Blackwood tree. Like, I know. And then she just goes right back into the crowd. So in theory, Josh says that if they can cut down Seb's conduit tree, then he will be able to be killed. And Josh says, hey, I'm a naturalist. I can go locate this tree, but I kind of want someone to come with me, like a partner, in case things go south. And Julia can't do it because she's got toe worms.
She wanted to go, but Fen said, no. You stay.
Lots of misinformation out there about toe worms.
And apparently, Fen has toe worms, and she doesn't even have toes. So
she got them from the wooden toes, bro.
Yeah, she has the wooden toes.
Okay, so the wooden toes count. All right.
So Josh was like, oh, I thought you could only get them with wooden toes.
Oh, yeah.
And Fen says,
dude, classic case of misconception, dude.
Dude, exactly. Jimmy getting caught up in the misinformation.
I hate to call you dumb in front of all your friends, Jimmy, but God.
I know. And I'm a vet, too. Oh, this is embarrassing.
She turns it right back on Josh, says, I have toe worms. You're going to make me take a hike? And Josh is like, no, I would never. So then naturally, the next person that they go to is Margot. So Julia says that her and Fen are going to try and create a problem that requires two magicians to fix, allowing Elliot the perfect moment to kill Seb, because Seb would go to his magical advisor, Elliot, to try and handle some cooperative magic. Elliot expresses that he is still torn about assassinating Seb, and this is when Margot and Elliot kind of walk away together, and Elliot's kind of heated because Margot promised that he wouldn't have to be the one to pull the trigger. And that's where he just grabs the can or the flask, thinking it's a mojito, guzzles it, and they totally Freaky Friday.
It's time to switch bodies. Over it up, bitch. It was so good. Can we just take a moment to imagine Hail Applebaum studying Margot's film, watching the show?
Yeah, I hate to call you stupid in front of all your friends.
Go back, dude.
Applebaum, Appleman. Who's Applebaum?
Tannenbaum's.
So we're going to cut that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
No, do it again, because there's going to be a good thing to say.
No. I
do
don't
it again, pussy.
So just picture Hale Appleman watching this show just to study Margot and the little nuances that of her personality and the little quirks that she has. And then just nails it completely perfectly.
I thought they were both really good. I thought Summer was incredible about trying to act as Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was unbelievable at it.
I thought the other way. I thought that he was so good at being Margot.
Really?
The inflections he puts on words, like the little phrases he ended on the end of things, the insults, it was all like very, very, very Margot.
The way he would like open his eyes and like get real wide at the end of his sentences when he's just like threatening or something like that. It was just too funny. The way that he stood with his foot. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they both probably had so much fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this was a dream for the two of them, I'm sure. They're probably cracking up at it.
Yeah.
After that Freaky Friday, they're kind of just talking about it. Elliot's a little pissed, but Margot tells him, yeah, this is the only way that you wouldn't have to be the one to technically assassinate Seb. Like, I'll do it in your body, whatever. She also describes that there's a caveat to using this potion. If either of them tell anybody else that they switched, then they can never switch back. So that's going to set us up for some hijinks later. And also, Margot can see Charlton now that she's in Elliot's body, which is awesome. And she immediately says, yo, who is this guy? He can just fuck right off. And Elliot's like, no, Margot, like, he could help you. Like, extend an olive branch to this guy.
She just looks at him and goes, stay the fuck out of my way. And it's just so funny, man. Just watching. I can't even. You have to watch the show to be able to realize how beautiful and piece of artwork this is.
I've managed just fine without a Tyler Durden up my cooch.
And I love how they actually bring up to each other, like, wait, why do you see Charlton? Why don't I still see Charlton? What's going on here? Oh, whatever. We'll just deal with it.
So Margot in Elliot's body is going off to assassinate Seb, essentially. But she tells Elliot, try not to have the conversation with Josh. She's going to try, but try your best not to ruin our relationship. So the next scene we have is Margot in Elliot's body going to see Seb in the throne room. And the imaginary issue that Julian Fenn cooked up was that the entire castle has been struck with the sleeping curse, and Seb needs Elliot's help with the cooperative magic to fix it. And Elliot is talking like Margot would, and Seb kind of notices that he's a little bit off. And this is the first scene where I'm like, okay, Hale is kind of killing it as Margot too.
Uncomfort whatevs. Right when he said that, I was like, this is so obvious. And Charlton is like sitting on the throne, like, this is not going well.
Yeah, he's like, that could have went better. I mean, she wasn't even trying to be Elliot at that point.
Next scene we get is Fenn and Julia. And Julia says that she doesn't want this baby or this pregnancy dictating her entire life. And Fenn is actually a great confidant to share this pregnancy with. Great episode for Fenn. She was giving her sound advice. She said, you know, listen, if you don't want this baby dictating your life, you have to do something about it. Like, even in filler, abortion is a pretty simple procedure. And Julia's like, are you saying I should get it? She says, no, but you have to make a choice. You're letting something into your life that you can't control, but in lots of ways, it will control you. It'll make you happy, devastate you, this, that, and the other thing. And Julia says that she's been pregnant before, obviously, through rape. And this time she's like, this is a much better pregnancy for me. I was kind of looking forward to just having some time to think it over. I have 9 months, though. But Fenn's like, oh, sweetheart, what are you talking about? It's Red Monkey Month. Mm-hmm. Everything moves faster. Weirdly, not monkeys, but everything else moves faster.
I'll be honest. This is like one of the first times that saney fillery stuff just like didn't hit the mark for me. I thought that was just ridiculous. I mean, they didn't really have much of a choice because Stella was legitimately pregnant in real life. But I was like, Red Monkey Month speeds up everything.
Yeah, like harvest and everything like that. Like,
Yeah, I feel like they have enough weird explanations for things where I was fine with it when I first heard it.
Yeah, it's also funny that we never even mentioned the possibility of Julia getting pregnant, even though we know that Stella was pregnant in this season. You know, I guess the assumption would just be they would hide it and just didn't anticipate them coming straight out in our face with the bunnies going pregnant. It's like, oh, shit, that makes a lot of sense that Julia would get pregnant.
Well, how early did you guys notice that Stella was pregnant in the show? Because it was pretty it was getting pretty blatant before they actually announced she was pregnant as Julia.
I haven't really been looking for it, so I haven't noticed.
Yeah, it was the typical Lily Aldrin's, Paul, with the hiding it for the. It was only really this episode before they actually announced it. You know, like early in the episode when she's talking, you know, she's pretty, you know, you could tell she's wearing the baggy stuff and she's not normal Julia.
She's plump. You can just say it, dude. You ever beating her out of the bush?
She's a big old broad, dude.
Yeah, that's one way to say it. She still looks great, though.
I mean, the only problem I have, I don't know Florian astronomy, but like they've been there for like more than a month, like more than a year, I should say. So they should have heard about like Red Monkey Month or just before or something like that. But oh well. But anyway, it was a really cool conversation to see Fenn actually kind of talk about this because she was pregnant and did have a baby. And you can relate, and you know she's not bullshitting to Julia when she's giving her advice. She's actually saying things from the heart.
I rock with them as scene partners too. I think those two have a very interesting connection because Fenn is so fucking goofy and Julia is very quick. So she kind of catches on to Fenn's jokes. And like the whole way that Julia dealt with the toe worm stuff, like Julia was right on it. Wasn't happy about it, obviously, because Fenn's wacky and it came out of left field. But I mean, Julia even finishes the whole conversation with, yeah, like me and Fenn will figure this out, assuming our toes can handle it, you know? So I think that Julia and Fenn's kind of the combo of the two of them is really, really nice. And I'm glad especially with this topic, because like you said, Paul, Fenn has the experience with it. I thought this was a really nice scene.
It's nice when Fenn gets taken seriously. Because she's usually like the kind of the brunt of all the jokes, but it's nice when people actually sit down and have conversations. Like before in the apocalypse, when Elliot sat down with Josh that's like just a weird conversation where I was like, oh, that was beautiful.
Was that a, did you just kiss your fingers right there?
I did.
Like a chef kiss? Okay. Just wanted to make sure people got that.
Sorry.
So
Paul is Italian.
I mean, really, Fenn is one of the best people to have one of those in any serious conversation with, because she's like so pure and she'll just give you a good answer. You know, she's not going to be snippy. She's not going to be giving you attitude, sarcastic. She's just going to talk to you like a person.
She's the bomb. So we transition from Julia dealing with her pregnancy to Josh dealing with his whole Margot situation. But we all know that it's not Margot. It's actually Elliot. And while they do eventually get into a serious topic, I just love how it starts out with Margot being afraid of the butterflies. And that's Elliot's fear. And he says it out loud too. And I love the reasoning behind it, because he's like, you just never know where they're going to go next. That's just such a funny reason to be afraid of butterflies.
And right after that, Josh is like, whoa, what's wrong? Like, do you want a macaroon? Elliot says, I better not. And this smile that this motherfucker has on his face when he drops the line, Margot, it's a snack, not a trap. Such a trap.
Right. He's an emotional ninja, man. He knows.
100%. He does take a macaroon, right? And he walks away. And I love that Elliot says, you're a little bit taller from this POV. Like, you know, Josh kind of gets a little bit real with Margot and says that he understands what she did to him and Fenn, and kind of wants to know if now she wants to break up because they're in this weird spot, or if they're even something that could be broken up. Like, are we even in a relationship? He just wants to know what's good with them. And Margot says that she can't talk other than to say that she thinks she needs more time to forgive herself. So Elliot is just trying to dodge this conversation at all costs for Margot.
And Josh brings up a conversation that they had, I believe, when they're in the cage and he's about to, you know, become a werewolf. And then post-coital, they discuss kind of what they are. And he says, do you remember what I said, or what you said rather, when I said, like, I'm not into games? Excuse me. And the line, the way he delivers it, is so perfect. He goes, you said, fuck games. And I think Elliot even says, like, yeah, that sounds like me.
That sounds like me.
So good.
I love this plot line that they Freaky Friday'd. I just love it so much that they get to play each other. Must have been so fun. You guys said it earlier, but it must have been so fun to act it out.
The only bad part about it is us talking about it. We're saying Elliot when it's Elliot in Margot.
Yeah, true.
Like that. But I mean, if you saw the episode, you know what's good.
Yeah.
I described that in my notes like 4 different ways throughout my notes. Like
Elliot, yeah, I was going
body,
back and forth.
Like I used parentheses and stuff. So anyway, next scene, we go back to Elliot and Seb. Elliot actually Margot and Seb working on waking up everybody in the castle. Charlton is pissed, like, dude, you already taught him the spell. Like, this is going to be over too quickly. Margot says, relax. I taught him the spell incorrectly so I can get up close and personal with him, trying to, like, teach him how it actually works. And she immediately tries to be Margot. This has Margot's fingerprints all over it. Like, goes up behind him, starts, like, caressing him, showing him, like, the hand signals for the spell. And Seb immediately pushes her off. Charlton says, I know you know how to seduce a man, but you don't know how to seduce a man like Elliot would. Seb loves his vulnerability, not his forwardness. So then she kind of dials it back and goes over to apologize to Seb.
Charlton knows every little thing about Elliot. I love it. He's just been, so much time in the back of his mind.
And she uses Charlton's device really well. I mean, she kind of goes up and starts working the whole dead lover angle. That's the vulnerability, obviously, that Elliot has. We've been talking about it all episode. And that kind of gets Seb to open up a little bit. Seb has a great quote in the sense that it's fucking confusing as shit when he says, I must put Fillory first, even if it means I must suffer. And I wrote in my notes that they're really pushing that angle from him of where he's like, this is my burden. Like, I have to carry this for Fillory. Even though we all know that it's a burden that he himself creates for himself. So it's just adding on even more. And Margot in this scene is kind of like, damn, like he is sincere about that quote. Like, I don't know how I feel about him now.
So you guys still have no idea what his agenda is.
It's impossible to tell because they're throwing it in our face that he's like kind of sincere about it.
He seems to have Fillory's best interest at heart at the end of the day, which is a good thing. He can't be a bad guy if he wants what's best for Fillory, which I think he genuinely does. So, yeah, I can't get a full read on him.
I mean, It depends. Like, I like the idea that you're saying that there's somebody higher than him making him do the Dark King things, because I mean, if you're saying I'm doing this for fillery and I have Taker's taking six kids, then he's still a bad dude.
Yeah.
But if he has somebody above him, then he's redeemable. Cause like you said, I mean, the way that he acts, you're feeling for Elliot. And finally Margot is feeling it too, because the whole time she's saying, all right, dude, you're digmatized pretty much, you know, and now she's finally saying, oh man, I mean, it is kind of confusing.
I said at the end of last episode that I didn't want Elliot to try to rationalize this, but the show is doing it for him. They're pushing the rationalization in our faces, kind of almost, of this guy's just doing it because he cares, la da da da, which it just, you feel like I've seen enough TV in my fucking life and read enough stories that there is obviously more to it than that. I really like the idea of someone being higher than him, or some people being higher than him, B-Tums. I didn't really consider that, but now I'm in on that. I like that.
What if Todd is the one that's above him, making him do all this shit? What if he's really the Dark, Dark King?
If I'm honest, that makes the most sense.
Yeah.
So I can get down with that.
Todd is part of the couple.
I just spoil it.
Oh, God. Two Todds are the couple. Oh, that would be crazy.
Todd and Evil Todd.
That would be amazing.
Oh, my God. Or like Todd and Fog are the couple. That would be amazing.
Anyway, that'll get us to the next Josh and Margot scene. Margot actually Elliot. And Josh just calls her out. It's just like, nope, you know what? I'm not buying it. You're being way too patient and agreeable. There is no way you're the real Margot. And Josh just says, I'm not taking you to this tree until you explain what's going on.
I don't know if it was the lighting, the setting in the forest, the blue outfit she has on, but the one note I wrote in this scene is that she looks amazing. She looks so beautiful in this scene. I was like paused it and was like, wow.
I was gonna
Summer
say the same
Bishel
thing.
Is so attractive. She is just a beautiful woman.
Her hair is different too, man. She's just doing it in this scene.
I think
maybe it's because it's we're obsessed with Elliot. I mean,
yeah,
that's such a good point.
I love Josh's reaction. He's like you could be a hallucination or a shapeshifter. Like, this is fucking fillery, man. Like, you could be something, but you're not Margo.
Yeah, you got to give Josh props, because besides Elliot, he is the one that knows her best, better than anyone else.
Kind of knows a more unique side to her than Elliot even
Oh,
knows.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah.
Elliot knows her better, but Josh has a little bit of, a unique experience with her, obviously.
Right.
Although, I mean, Elliot and her have banged, technically, so.
Yeah, Paul, that was a freaking sexy scene, wasn't it?
It was. It was borderline sexiest scene of the episode, but, you know, the Dark King and his goddamn abs.
There can only be one.
I don't know.
So, next scene goes back to Elliot, actually Margot, having this one-on-one with Charlton where she's venting and expressing like, yeah, this Dark King doesn't seem evil. Like, I don't understand it. The dots aren't connecting. The castle is just starting to wake up. Their cooperative spell was successful. And Dark King says, hey, you know, that's a wrap on this, but why don't me and you just have a second to talk in private? And Charlton says, hey, I don't know what's good, but this kind of seems like the last chance we're going to get at the assassination. Then we get a cut back to Josh watching Margot, actually Elliot, attempt to locate the Blackwood tree by herself. And obviously it's not as easy as it looks. So Margot just starts begging Josh to help. And then she finally just lets him have it, saying like, you know, maybe I did tell you what you want to hear, but only because you never let up. You keep trying to get me to talk about something that I don't want to talk about. You picked someone who will never put you first. There's no fixing Margot. I mean me. Because chances are, if I had to relive it, I'd make the same decision. So stop asking me to apologize for something I don't feel sorry about. Not that I won't feel differently tomorrow. Which, if that is Elliot's consciousness, that's probably what Margot is thinking in her actual head. Or that is probably advice that Elliot, as Margot's best friend, would give to Josh if he wants that relationship to be successful.
I just think that it's so sad that is what gets Josh to be like, now you sound like you.
Yeah.
You know, her kind of berating him and being that mean to him. It's just kind of like, damn,
The amount of times he's had to deal with that from Margot, you know, because he's had a couple of those in the past.
Yeah, I'm a little upset that is kind of the take, only because, I mean, we get the scene on the balcony in episode, I believe it's, what, 7 or 6?
Yeah, right after the apocalypse.
Where Elliot says to her, you know, like, you're growing, you're evolving, like, I can't even catch up to you. And I feel like that's was like seasons, you know, 1 through 4-ish Margot. But I feel like in reality, I don't really think that Elliot knows how Margot actually feels about Josh.
Right.
I think he was making good points, but they were logical points, and they were right to the sense that she would make that same decision over and over again. But you can't say it to Josh. That's the thing. Like it's not that you would lie to him, but you can't be like, hey, like I would let you die if I had to do it all over again, because that just will not make him feel good in any type of way.
I just like to think that Margot is confused about how she feels. I think she has the idea of herself as Margot the Destroyer, doesn't know how to deal with the fact that she's into Josh. That's the take I like. I mean, that might be looking at Margot with rose-colored glasses. I'm almost certainly positive that that is how Kathleen views it. That's the way I'm going to take it. I really hope that, I mean, they say it in a, you know, next scene or two scenes that Elliot quote unquote ruined their relationship, but there's no way that's fucking true.
Yeah. I mean, I've always I've always taken it pretty much the way you're saying it, Kyle, where she has the barriers up. You know, she knows she cares about Josh. She said it a few times. I mean, she's had some phenomenal lines about how she's catching the feelings for Josh. What does she say? I think I love this guppy, and you know, all the, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's funny how even the other cast members think like she's acting in a way where they just don't believe that she would actually like Josh. They're kind of making fun of it. Not so much now, but they definitely were before. You know, even Elliot was saying like, this is just like, this is kind of weird. What's going on here? So she just doesn't admit anything out loud that has to do with her being vulnerable.
And the way this ended was, as B. Thompson was saying, Josh goes, okay, now you sound like her. There's a tree. Go cut it down. Walks away like a boss. Don't let him see you cry, Josh. Don't let him see you cry.
That's what it is. I'm sad that Josh is sad. I'm also sad that that is what he gets for this conversation that he was probably hoping would be very productive.
Yeah.
And he just kind of got like dunked on.
I mean, that's where you give him the props, because he obviously was hoping it was the first conversation where she meaning Elliot was like, listen, I'm sorry. I just need some time to digest this, but I do regret what I did. But then he knows. He's like, no, that's not you, Margot. That's really not you.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see where he goes from here. I mean, in a sense, he has a little bit of closure because they've finally had the conversation. And she, from his perspective, has spoken her mind, when in reality, it's Elliot's mind. Well, I'm just really looking forward to how he reacts to it. If he tries to play it cool, he's still baking shit, trying to act like, you know, nothing's really that wrong.
There's no way real Margot allows it to just be left like that.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think hopefully next episode we finally get the conversation that Josh deserves. But for this episode, we leave it at that for their relationship. And the next scene we get is Elliot's body, Margot's consciousness, and Seb getting to talk in private. So this is Margot's big chance for the assassination. To begin the conversation, Seb kind of starts off alluding to having a change of heart about stepping down from the throne. When Elliot brought it up, he was dismissive, saying, this is my burden. But I forget the first words that he said, but it was like, do you remember our conversation? Are you still willing to help?
Charlton explaining everything to Margot, just summarizing it so perfectly. Oh, he's awesome.
I love Charlton. That was a great thing to introduce for this season, is just Elliot's conscience in a way. I think it's great. But just as Seb is asking, you know, I'm having a change of heart, the candle turns green, which is the go-ahead. The conduit tree is down, so he is vulnerable. And this was a horrible assassination attempt. She like blatantly reaches for the knife, takes like 10 seconds to unsheath it, and then like slowly puts it up to his throat. And this dude is a military man, just like, see ya, bozo.
Margo.
Like, come on.
What the fuck was that, Margo? That was horrible. Like, you could at least, like, go in for a kiss and, like, try to distract him instead of staring at him weirdly for 10 seconds and then slowly pulling out a knife. It was like he did everything else perfectly.
So, and then we get, this is kind of two scenes in parallel. We have Julia and Fenn kind of starting to realize that it's taking too long and something must have gone wrong. They see guards are rushing down the halls to the Dark King's quarters. And Fenn gives Julia her extra knife, which I thought was funny because she always carries around a knife and an extra knife. And then we go back to Elliot, actually Margot and Seb. And Seb kind of has Elliot cornered, like, you know, smother the assassination attempt. Now he has Elliot on the ropes, and Margot is about to explain. She says, yes, I can, like, I have an explanation, but it'll have consequences. And before she gets the chance, Julia comes in, saves the day, kills the Dark King from behind. She also looks good. It's like a fencing stance she has when she like stabs him to the back.
In the Centurion outfit.
I have never been more upset to see Julia in my entire life. Because I wanted that to be Fensical Wahlberger so goddamn bad.
Easily could have been.
Easily could have been.
The writers definitely had a conversation, like, who should we pick? Because they're the two options. They're both together in the room when they decide to go.
That totally should have been Fen.
Fen has the quote earlier in the episode where it's not like we could just walk up to him and stab him. And that's what they did. And it should have been her who did it. Thank you.
I agree.
Whatever. So Dark King's dead. No way he comes back.
They just kind of nod at each other, look down at the Dark King's body. And we don't really get anything else. The next scene is just, it cuts to them in, it's almost like a locker room. Like they're just changing after a game, like having a conversation. And it's Margot and Elliot back in their respective bodies. And they're just like, hey, like, what did you say while you were in my body? What did you say while you were in my body?
Just absolute devastation to both of them. I mean, Elliot perfectly summarizes it. I mean, he even says, yes. So in summation, we're both equally skilled at destroying our own happiness.
Fucking love that quote. I'm glad you had it.
So good. And I love how, too, he says he didn't want to have the conversation with Joss, but he was just like, he's too persistent.
The damn macaroons.
Josh's a goat.
Margot also said that Charlton's going to hang in Elliot's beach memories for a little while. The Seb thing was a little bit hard on him, which makes me a little bit sad because I feel like that means we're not going to get Charlton for a couple episodes, probably because they didn't want to shell out the budget. But
yeah, that is kind of sad.
They wouldn't put that line in, you know.
A quote that I would like to say before we dip off is that Margot tells Elliot to calm him down, or not to calm him down, but to kind of make him feel better. And this is like the most Margot way to make someone feel better ever, when she's like, he was hot and complicated. Those are the ones worth banging.
Margot's giving him good advice. She also says that, like, listen, dude, you have had horrible luck with boys recently, but that doesn't mean you don't deserve love. I feel like Elliot's starting to internalize a lot of this stuff and starting to think that there's something wrong with him. And Margot's just got his back, like, nah, dude, like, stay in the game. You got this. You've just had some bad luck. I always love a scene where it's just Elliot talking to Margot.
Some really bad luck.
The next scene, the last scene, the 10-second scene, we get just the Dark King. They didn't do anything with his dead body. They just left him there and they ran away. And they really should have done something, because it just pans over it, pool of blood all around him. All of a sudden, gasps for a breath, and he's sitting up. Guess he's still alive. Did you guys see that coming?
Chop this dude into a million pieces.
Yeah, right? You always go for the head. What did we learn in Infinity War?
Yeah.
Honestly, TV, movies, the one thing I've learned is always double tap. Zombieland.
Yep.
Double tap. Once you kill dude, if you stab him in the back, cut that head off.
Yep.
No coming back from that. Doesn't matter. Come on.
So, like, shit.
The only thing I'm feeling right now is that it was the tree they cut down was the wrong conduit.
So at the moment when Julia stabs DK, did you guys thought that was the end of his arc, or, you know, what
I thought
were you
he
thinking?
Was dead. I don't know. It felt a little bit anticlimactic because there were so many more questions about the Dark King, and I don't think that they would give us answers if he was dead. So I had an inkling that he was coming back, but the fact that he was only dead for the span of 5 episode minutes was pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. I thought they would at least wait till the beginning of next episode to give us that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty impossible in the moment when he gets run through with the sword to not think that he's dead. But I would agree with B-Times that it would be hardly anticlimactic, and I would be upset if that was the end of him. His conduit is definitely the world tree that they talked about that grew from the seed. That's what I'm saying.
Whoa.
Okay. Okay, Kyle.
Getting places.
Check next to the rook. I like that theory.
Do you think he's going to be mad at Elliot for stabbing him?
I mean, now that they're switched back, they could probably... I don't know. Honestly, I didn't even think about the fallout of the Dark King still being alive and being able to persecute them for killing them. I'm not sure if he would be completely malicious or if he would just be like, what the fuck, guys? Like, what's really going on here?
It's very telling that he actually says, I mean, you could tell he cares about Elliot because in the scene when the knife comes out, he's like, what's going on? Are you enchanted? Like, what's your deal? You know, he didn't believe it's actually Elliot in the first place.
I think in the next episode or two, we're going to get some revelations on the Dark King that is going to make him more of a good guy than a bad guy. And I think everyone's going to align together to face this taker slash even bigger existential crisis threat. That's what I see coming. Also, Dark King is Rupert Chatwin. So like Plum's going to come in. It's going to be a whole Chatwin thing. I don't know. I'm going to be so pissed if this entire season goes by and his name is just Seb. Nothing special about him. He's just some dude.
All right. So we got two big theories here. We got, and I know your Rupert Chatwin thing came a while ago. I just wasn't on the pod. So we got Kyle with the World Tree and we got B Toms with the Rupert Chatwin. Those are both some good theories, man. I like it.
All right. I'll give you a buy two, get one free. End of the series. Todd and Fenn endgame. Book it.
Whoa.
I need it. Okay. I need it.
Another rook check. Let's see. Put that on the board.
They're perfect for each other.
Skipping past the fact that Fenn is currently married to Elliot.
Bro, that's just a small hurdle? Is not still a thing.
Is that true?
I assumed as soon as he got banished, that marriage kind of just dissolved. But yeah, it's a great question.
I feel like they're still technically... I guess you're right. I don't know.
That's Todd's.
Those are Todd's toes, baby.
Yeah, those are Todd's toes, no doubt.
Oh, he's going to be having fun with those worms.
I just want great things from a boy, so.
Yeah, well, Fenn is great things, man. We love Fenn.
Are we doing a Ben Kilmeri?
Have we done one for everyone? I think we have
to. Yeah,
yeah.
This was a big Fenn episode. We could do Fenn, Zelda, and Marina.
Oh,
I like Fenn. I like Fenn.
You just whipped that up.
Yeah, it did. That's a pretty good one.
Damn, baby.
That is a good one.
All right.
We good? Holy shit.
Yeah, I think Kathleen's going to be pissed that we do a Marina one and she's not in it.
Holy shit, we love Marina too. All right.
So Zelda, Fenn, Marina, what do you do? Go.
Anyone want to go first?
I feel like that was you just...
Yeah.
Stepping up to the plate when you started talking.
I know. All right. I'll go first. I think I'm hoping it's all across the board that we're marrying Fenn. She's just the best. I feel like Elliot lost on that deal, not being a good husband to her. Marina, I just think she's crazy. She's hot when she's got that weird goth thing going on. I don't know about goth technically, but I love Marina. I have to bang Marina because I'm not marrying her. She's too crazy. She'll definitely cause some problems for me if we marry her, but I can't give it up. So bang Marina and Zelda. I'm sorry, but I got to let her go.
Okay, I'll go next. So I am going to marry Fenn. I might even fuck around and take her last name. I'll be Kyle Wahlberger. I don't even care because Fenn is awesome. I would love to give her the baby that she so desperately wants. I'm going to kill Marina because Marina is just a little wacky. I, like Jimmy said, can't marry her, but I can't bang her because I absolutely need to bang Zelda. Zelda is hot with those glasses and the fucking arm pose. We're banging in the library. It's just, I can't even imagine not saying bang Zelda.
I just had to switch positions, man. I just had to shift in my sheet after I heard that.
Kyle, I just need to know, do you think she has that arm position during sex too?
Hell yeah. I'll make her seize up so it's just stuck there.
Yeah. Is that how it happened? Do you think she was permanently jerking off to you guys and that's just why her hands are like that?
You thought she was pterodactylin?
Yeah, just a natural position. Dude, okay. she was in the drug realm forever. What do you think she was doing in there?
True, but she has experience.
True, man. I might take it back. I forgot how crazy that.
I'm doing mine. Marrying Fenn because she's the best. Killing Marina because she terrifies me. And Kyle convinced me, dude. She has experience. She's a master magician. She knows all the pleasure spells. I'm going banging Zelda.
Dude, she's hot.
Paul's just moving all around, man.
This conversation is too much, dude. Take my shirt off.
Okay. So I'll go too. And this is going to be basic. Yeah. Mary Fenn, obviously, she's just like this goofy person. I also feel like she would be like a great wife. with like just general things that you would want from a wife. Like, great cook is a huge plus. I feel like she's a great cook. Daughter of a wife maker, like, she's probably, you know, she's probably pretty independent, you know, knows how to take care of herself. So yeah, all Mary fan.
Did you say daughter of a wife maker?
Knife maker. I may have said wife maker.
Honestly, yeah. He was both at this point.
Honestly, yeah.
Right here, I'm the wife maker, baby. Anyway.
Is that what you call your penis?
Moving forward. Now it is. So I'll bang Marina. She is, since season one, I've had like a giant crush on Marina. I think she's just drop dead gorgeous. And as far as the character goes, like, I could have all the goodness of her without the fact that she's like an awful human being. So yeah, I'll just bang her. And unfortunately, Zelda is just the odd man out. So I'll kill Zelda, but no animosity towards Zelda. I think she was a very competitive name to put in this trio.
If you bang Marina, you're definitely risking your wife maker in that transaction.
Gotta risk it to get the biscuit, baby.
True.
That's so true.
Keep an eye out for our continued coverage of The Magicians. We're going to be covering each episode of season 5 week by week. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
Peaches and plums, motherfuckers.
Jesus is clits.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.